Hello and welcome to the End Evil podcast. This is Chris Jansen. Evil is the destruction of freedom. Thanks for coming, folks. Another fantastic episode coming to you this week. Thanks for joining us. Today, I am going to start a series I've been really looking forward to on self-protection and self-defense. And I've really been looking forward to meeting the gentleman I have with me here today. Before I do that, I just want to remind you guys, if you haven't yet, get your copy of The End of All Evil by Jeremy Locke. You can go to endevil.life and click on the store tab. There's also a donations tab. Donations are much appreciated and needed to keep the End Evil podcast alive and thriving, as Leslie Powers would say. I also have copies of the book that changed my life. This one says not for resale on it, but yours will not. Yours will say, just have the beautiful cover on there, preface on there by Will Keller. And I'll sign it for you and send you some stickers for the End Evil podcast. If you go to endevil.life, click on the store tab, and you'll see all the links there to purchase the books. All that aside, I'm super excited. I've been looking forward to this interview for weeks. And I read a book called... Now, I had it right in front of me, but your book is Violence and Ego.
Violence and Ego, yeah.
And Dan Arnold is a lifetime martial artist, been a police officer. You've had all kinds of crazy life experiences. I'll let you do a better job. I'm not the best introduction guy, so I'll just hand it off. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Dan, to let the audience know?
I started doing martial arts when I was 10 years old. And for me, it was about self-defense. I really didn't get into the combat sport aspect of it, but I did a little bit of that as I got older. And then I went into the Marine Corps. I got out of the Marines and worked in a prison for 5 years, a closed maximum security prison. And then I was a cop for over 20 years. And I had to get out of that line of work because of all the contradictions in it. And I became an anarchist. And people ask me, well, how can you spend all that time working for various levels of the state and then be an anarchist? And I'll tell them, you just answered your own question. How can I not be? So I left that work in 2015. So 10 years later, here I am. Oh, can't hear you.
Yeah, I'm muted. Sorry about that.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm going to share your YouTube channel. So folks can check it out. I'll put it up on the screen during the live cast. And there's a lot of great info that Dan's putting out. Interesting, too. And yeah, I've been spending the last few weeks reading your book. And that's been like right in line with what I've been studying self-defense, weapon self-defense for the last 2-3 years, a little longer. And it's been a huge influence on my life, and it's really changed my point of view on things in a massive way. And I thought maybe first I'd ask you about what I'm going to call the blind spot. In terms of self-defense and martial arts, I feel like people have a false interpretation in their mind to begin with. And that's partly why we need to set the stage through movies, through things they've seen, television, and people, a lot of people that do martial arts put the wrong face forward about what it really is. And I noticed towards the end of your book, you even use the term I like, self-protection, which kind of gets to the point what I'm talking about. But please, from your point of view, what is the blind spot that most people have in regards to self-defense?
I think the biggest blind spot that I see, and I've seen it in police work too, somebody will have a certain skill set, and they'll want to show you that skill set. And they want to try to sell you on that skill set. And they will come up with a problem specifically to show off that technique. Where in real life, that problem will rarely ever present itself. It's very situational. That's a serious blind spot I see with martial artists. They want to demo their best stuff, so they'll come up with a scenario that rarely ever occurs in real life. That's the biggest blind spot that I see.
Your book talks about ego. And I feel like a big part of some of the stories you told too, especially doing trainings, because it sounds to me like you had really evolved to the point where people look up to you at every job you've had to help teach the lessons, but you've also been in the position of being taught by others. Mm-hmm. And in the fight situations you've been in through childhood and the aggressive situations, it seems like over and over you've alluded to, even in the title of the book, the problem of ego and how that affects. So maybe we could talk a little bit about ego in violent situations.
Yeah, there's the one. I know you just brought me to back to that last question too about another blind spot. Another blind spot is most people don't train or practice any type of verbal de-escalation skills, right? Or they have this, their ego will jump up and their mouth will try to write checks that their behind can't cash. And a lot of that's just asocial violence. It's social violence where they feel like they have to puff up. Maybe because they're ladies there or something. And this is normally found with younger men. I think when you get to be like over 40 or 45 years old, you know, and me, I'm over 50, you kind of don't have to have this need to want to prove yourself anymore. But I think de-escalation, conflict de-escalation is not practiced enough. And, you know, we still got to live by laws in this society. So every state's going to have their own self-defense laws, and it's good to make yourself somewhat familiar with them so you know what to do in the aftermath of a self-defense situation. But yeah, I think verbal de-escalation is not used enough.
Yeah, and I think self-defense, when you say self-defense, a lot of times people, right, their mind goes, or you say martial arts, people go to stuff they've saw in movies or someone they know who practices some level of that. And a lot of that's kind of blown out of proportion in certain ways. So, you know, I love the trivium. Maybe we could kind of start off by just sort of defining, like, what is self-defense? What is self-protection? What's the difference between self-defense, self-protection, and martial arts? I mean, obviously they're somewhat intertwined, but...
No, they're all intertwined. They all overlap. Self-defense, simply put, and many years ago, I had a former recon Marine put it to me this way, and it made sense, and I've used it ever since. Simply put, self-defense is the ability to fight while you're hurt. Because more likely than not, you already took a hit. You already took damage. You didn't see it coming. Most of the times when you're not a party to some type of situation, you may not see it coming. Now, of course, the biggest thing to mitigate that would be environmental and situational awareness. But nobody's 100% alert at all times. So you're going to have a small window of opportunity to maybe see a glimpse of some type of movement to react. And or you're going to already have taken damage. That to me is self-defense. Self-protection would encapsulate your situational environmental awareness, your ability to de-escalate a situation. Your ability to know what your escapes are, war games, situations where you're at. What do you have that you could put between you and an assailant? Okay. You don't have to stay there and fight somebody. You could run. And this isn't like the movies where it has to be a fair fight. If you have to pick up a brick and hit him in the head and run, do it. Self-protection to me is the whole thing. Self-protection to me is your brake lights on in your vehicle? Get them fixed. You don't want to rear end somebody. Know what's around you. Know what kind of area you're in.
Even how you look at people, right? Like, because I grew up in a bad neighborhood, and there's certain ways that are not good to look at people, especially when you're in a bad neighborhood, right?
Yeah, just a quick glance, like a glance, and you kind of, but what I used to do when I used to teach people in the prison,
little nod
is no, not even a nod. Just like if you glance at somebody and they want to really lock eyes with you, and you glance, just let something else got your attention. Just pretend like something else got your attention, and but keep your eye on somebody. You know, if someone starts to lock in on you, be aware of that. You know, have your ears open. It's not just what you see. What do you hear?
And how do you see best peripherally?
Oh, peripherally, you only can see so far peripherally, but how you see best is you just use off-center vision. So like if I'm looking around, I don't necessarily want to look at any one thing. I just use off-center vision to, that's what we used to call it when we were, as a sniper, we call it off-center vision. That's how you spot something. You're not going to spot it trying to look directly at it. You just kind of, you kind of scan and move your eyes around and you'll pick up movement. It just depends where you're at. Know where you're at. Self-protection is know where you're at.
Context.
And if you don't know where you're at, then you just some basic things like pay attention to your surroundings. If something doesn't feel right about a situation or a person, it's not. I pulled into a gas station once around Jacksonville, Florida. I pulled in. I took a look around at 2 a.m. I took a look around. It was way too much activity at this gas station for 2 a.m. And people were just staring at me, Yeah, there's some 11-year-old kids leaning up against. I mean, this was just the hood. So I just was like, because I had my daughter with me too on top of that. And I just pulled in. I seen everything. And I was like, oh, okay, we're going to just keep on going. I'll get gas at the next spot. And I'd rather push my car halfway down the freeway later on than just get gas at that place. So, like, if you're in a situation where I had a situation this past summer where I knew if I went around somebody, I it could turn into a self-defense situation that would necessitate deadly force because this person is a rage monster with a gun fetish. And I did, so I obviously didn't get into that situation because I stayed away. That's keeping my ego under control.
Yeah, that's huge. And instincts, paying attention to your instincts.
Yeah.
Learning to trust.
I mean, I knew what he wanted to do. So self-protection is kind of all of it. And then martial arts is anything that gets you off the couch and you're doing that is, I mean, it doesn't matter what part of the martial arts it is. You could be doing a kata. You could be in the woods working your sticks on a tree or something, which goes along good with Bigfooting, tree knocking. Or I used to tell cops, when I was trying to work, empty hand self-defense techniques with them, they're like, well, we can't do this because we're not martial artists. And I would say, well, wait a minute. Do you carry a gun for a living? Yeah. Well, what's more martial than that? You are a martial artist. So sometimes being a martial artist or doing martial arts is practicing something you don't normally think of. It's not all MMA or Kung Fu theater on Saturday. It's anything. You want to practice on drawing a knife out of your pocket, you got to be fast with it. You got to be smooth with it. So even that movement is martial arts.
When I first started driving, my dad had told me, what do you do if you get a flat tire? And I was like, I don't know, pull over. He's like, yeah, well, that's a good start. And then, we talked through it. You want to get your foot off the gas generally as a rule, unless you really need to use the gas, and you want to stay calm. And then as soon as you take your foot off the gas, you want to guide the vehicle off the road, right? Because what I want you to do is imagine that process. And, things like that, imagining a process in your mind, really, I found it really reinforces that being prepared. When the thing actually happens, it's like I kind of have an idea already. And I've been in 2 other cars when somebody else did not do that and have not done that mental preparation. Right. And they slammed on the brakes and the car spun around on the freeway and you're like, whoa, 2 times, 3 times around.
Yeah.
So I know that's real because I've had it happen the other way around when I get the flat tire and it's like, oh, okay, stay cool. Just pull over, let the foot off the gas. So I think preparing yourself.
You're war gaming. So your mind is cognitively, you've done it already because you went through it already once. So you'll go through it a little bit easier, but then there's always those situations that you have to be kind of fluid on. And like one time I was driving on the freeway, nothing was going to prepare me for this. The hood of the car I was driving flew up and shattered my windshield. And I couldn't see nothing. The hood was right in front of me. I was in the fast lane near the berm and I just looked at the lane. I was driving out of my side window and I slowly pulled over, put my blinkers on, and ended up being okay, but nothing's going to prepare you for something like that. There's a lot of different things I think you're going to get surprised by, and staying calm and not panicking is the most important thing. Just don't panic.
Yeah. That's huge. And I think training, and that's kind of the next topic I was going to bring up, the importance of training. But before we even go there, I want to hover just a more minute, because I feel like most listeners, either to the show or in general of any show on YouTube, most people out there aren't really doing any type of regular self-defense practices or routines, partly because of a mental block. And I'm hoping in this episode to maybe break down that mental block a little bit. And I think some of the things you already alluded to are huge. Like, sometimes being self-protection or self-defense is maybe telling a lie in a situation. My teacher, Larry, has this story about a friend of his who's walking alone. I think he was in a different country. He was not somewhere he was normally in contact with. And right. A gang of guys right in front of him that he's going to have to come across. And there's really no way for him to get out of the situation. There's busy traffic, and turning around is going to be suspicious at this point. And he sees these guys are going to probably say something to him. And so he sees across the street a bunch of people coming out of a Chinese restaurant, like a big family or something. So he just raises his hand up and hey guys, I'll be right there. I'll call you in just a second. Joe. And then the people obviously look over. They don't know who the hell he is. But right. From the point of view of this gang of gangsters, yeah. Now he's connected to this whole group of people who know he's over there. And so now he's not quite the same prey he was before. And he's able to just kind of pass by him, and they don't give him such a hard time.
Right.
So maybe, you know, normally we think of as being lying, being dishonest, but running away, telling a lie, picking up a weapon does not lower who you are. If someone's attacking you or someone is threatening your being, it's protecting your being. And that is different when you're doing it in self-defense as opposed to just lying or just being dishonest or just running right. away from your problems. So right.
if someone's going to hurt you, you have no moral obligation to tell them the truth. I thought there was something else I was going to say, but go ahead. Yeah, you have no moral obligation to tell somebody to choose if they're going to hurt you. Absolutely. Oh, I know what I was going to say. There's this misnomer that you could be in an argument with somebody and you shouldn't hit them first. Under 99% of the time, I agree. But you have to watch nonverbal body cues along with what's verbally being said. If somebody's starting to get shallow breathing and they grit their teeth a little bit and they're flexing their fists and they're closing the distance on you and they're being threatening in their words.
Or stance position, right?
Yeah, they start to blade their body a little bit and they start walking towards you, or well, they puff their chest out and start coming towards you and they're telling you they're going to beat the shit out of you. You, okay, believe them. You don't have to wait for them to throw the first punch. I highly recommend throwing the first punch yourself. And I told a story in that book where I was cutting school. This is in my teenage years. And there was this big bully that was cutting school with us the whole day, kept messing with this littler guy. I was like one of the in-between dudes. And he kept messing with this littler guy. And towards the end of the day, I had just gotten sick of it. And I just said, dude, will you leave him the F alone and shut the F up? You know, I don't want to cuss on your
podcast. You can. Feel free.
All right, that's cool.
This podcast is fucking cool.
All right, cool. The dude turns around and starts walking towards me. We're on the railroad tracks. And this is in inner city Cleveland. He starts walking towards me. What you saying? He's, you know, he's coming at me aggressively. So once he got into my personal space, which is my space where I can hit somebody if they're getting in on, you know, as soon as he got in my personal space, I hit him. I wasn't going to wait for him to throw the first punch. And I, you know, made sure he apologized to that littler guy, and then he went on his way. Surprised everybody. Nobody, because I was quiet the whole day. I hadn't said anything. I was just quiet the whole day. I just got sick of it. And a funny story was how old was I then? 16, maybe? You know, go about 8 years later or whatever. I was 23, maybe. 7 years later. I was working in the prison. And next thing I know, the kid I defended was an inmate in there.
Wow.
So he came up to me and thanked me in the prison. He thanked me. I'm like, what the hell are you doing in here? He's like, I got caught stealing stuff out of a car or whatever. I'm like, dumb. What the hell did you do that for? But I mean, he's not a bad guy besides. I mean, he's a very bad guy for doing that. You know, but compared to the people that were in there for.
Now, that is dishonest.
Yeah, it is. It is. But he came up to me and he thanked me for it. That, you know, that kind of felt good. You know, it's always,
yeah.
I was
yeah.
surprised. I've had that come at me years later for something that I did. I just can't stand bullies. I've never been able to stand bullies.
That's awesome.
So
here's another one. I had a discussion with a young man who seemed to think that, if someone comes at you with fists, then you have to fight them with fists because that's just the right way to do things. And I'm like, let me hear Dan's answer.
Movies. You know the movies where Jean-Claude Van Damme and the other guy are on the roof and the other guy throws his gun down and Jean-Claude Van Damme does it too? No, that's when I would shoot the dude. Like, literally, you don't have to fight. If they want to do you harm, do whatever you need to do to survive the harm. John.
Especially if you don't have a lifetime of training, right? Has been literally training for many years.
Yeah, or there could be a sign. You don't know what they know.
They're on drugs?
Or they're on drugs, and there's been times I've had to, use force on people that were on drugs, and they are very strong. They don't know.
Yeah, you have that one story where you smashed the guy in the nose, no blood just came out of his face, and he didn't stop at all. And you were like, normally that'd be a showstopper, but the guy was high on
coke and whatever else he was doing. They used to smoke marijuana. They used to smoke wet. They called it. They put like formaldehyde or some other crap, a cocaine mixed with marijuana. And they were just incredibly strong. It disconnects whatever in your brain says, I'm weak, and they get chimpanzee strength. And they can be very dangerous and not have any, knowledge of anything at all. That's another thing. You could be training a long time and be a second, third, fourth, fifth degree black belt, been doing it a long time. You still don't know what that other person's intent is or what they know. Because intent's a big deal because you're starting behind the eight ball. If they got the intent to really hurt you, to take your stuff, you're starting from a bad position. You're starting behind the eight ball. You can never go backwards, run backwards faster than they can come forward. So that's another reason why, being aware of your surroundings is so important. But yeah, you're not obligated to, okay, it's going to be a fair fist fight. No, I got to stick with that.
Isn't it also true that a gun doesn't always beat a knife?
In a lot of cases up close, it won't. I had to show that to a couple people. You're not going to draw that like you think you are. Not even knife. Go ahead and draw it out. If they were within lunge, within distance where I can get a hold of them, 5-6 feet away, they go to draw for their gun. I know they got one on and they go to draw for it. They better be fast. They better be fast because both their hands are going to be busy. First off, they're going to have a clearing garment. They're going to have to draw. Both their hands are going to be busy. That leaves their head open. Okay, I'll go for it. So you're not going
to hold someone with the good intent can cover up to 17 to 20 feet, pretty dang fast.
It used to be the 21-foot rule with the knife, and they changed it to the 25-foot rule.
Because of tests?
I'm guessing because athletics has just gotten better since the old days or whatever. But
and drugs.
they can make it a long distance. And even in the best-case scenario, a lot of times when I was training this, because I used to train this all the time, is I'd have someone charge you. One of the things I would do most of the time is I would draw. I would fall backwards onto my back. And put my legs up between me and them and, work on getting a round off and hopefully not shoot my foot off in the process. But that's like the most realistic thing you can do. Otherwise, it ends up being like a mutual killing. They stab you, you shoot them. One of you might die first. One of you might die later. So there's no good. I think guns, knives, all that stuff, you got to have the right mindset because the tool itself isn't keeping you safe. If you were safe, you wouldn't have to carry that tool in the first place. So you're carrying that tool that you're going to use maybe to defend yourself with. And if you haven't, it gives you the false sense of security that you shouldn't have.
All which brings us back around to the next topic of training and practicing. Which, before I get into it, one last thing is, now that just went blank. I had one more thought on that. But, yeah, let's get into training, the importance of training. And I guess because really what I'm trying to get at is I don't think most people are doing, they say less than 4% of people even train any kind of martial arts. And so I'm trying to encourage people listening. Number one, the other thing was, even if you are carrying, like you said, a weapon on you, that is not just because you can carry a gun, that doesn't mean you're safe. as we just spoke, someone with a knife or an intent coming fast behind you or a different angle doesn't do you any good. So you should be training some kind of hand-to-hand weapons training or hands-only practice as often as possible. And if you're not, that's what I'm hoping this episode does to people listening, to encourage them to do so. So I'd like you to speak on that.
And it's not as hard as people think. The biggest thing that I would say about that is I've known people that they get their carry and concealed license to be able to carry before all these states started going to, constitutional carry, which everyone should go to do anyway. But once they got their license, they quit training martial arts. Like, oh, I don't need to do that anymore. And it's like, yeah, you do, because you're not going to know how to fight. So, like, I was training an amateur MMA fighter, and we were going over some things, and he said, well, that's not allowed in the rules. And I'm like, how many months are we away from this? And we're like 8 months away. I was like, well, let me just help you learn how to fight. And when we're a couple months out, we'll tweak it to the rules. So, again, the fight mindset's going to come from the grit that you have from your training in all areas. So if you train live in martial arts in some type of stand-up grappling, ground grappling, some striking, it doesn't have to be full contact sparring, but you're moving around. You get that timing and distancing down with another live human being. You're practicing some stuff. Say one day you're out and you have your gun with you. Well, you're going to have better reflexes just from your training. You're going to be able to get to it from your training. Training actually offers you all these different puzzles you have to solve. And it's just better to be good at solving them in general. So when they pop up in a real situation, you can solve it there a lot better than if you aren't training. You know what I mean?
We were talking about instincts are much faster than logic.
Yes, instincts and twitch muscle fibers. You need to have all that developed. And you can develop just through regular training. And then, some of the concepts that I work on is, how I am with a firearm, how I am with a knife, even sticks, empty hand. A lot of times it's almost the same stuff. So that way I don't have all these things I have to remember. Everything's tight.
That's one thing I love about the Kali sticks and Arnis, which, it's the same drills that work empty handed or with the weapon.
Yes.
One of the first things that my teacher Larry taught me was when we practice with these sticks, these sticks are moving at like 1 to 200 miles an hour. You can hear the sound, woo, how fast they're moving. Where you could throw the fastest fist you can, 30, 40 miles an hour, it's nowhere near the same speed. So when you start practicing with a larger weapon that gives you a little more range, it kind of gets your mind used to this higher speed, like things are happening. And then you're trying to swing one stick and do something with your other hand. Right. Now you're learning to coordinate. Well, two things are happening, which is exactly what you need to do to.
Hopefully you guys wear glasses, right? You guys wear glasses?
We don't. Maybe we should, but we don't wear glasses.
I've been whacked in the head so many times and so close. Yeah, I put on protective glasses whenever I do that. But you're 100% right. Like, training with a weapon, that's why I think weapons training, knife, stick, is important. Even when I go to the rifle range, if I'm shooting even at 100 yards, just the breathing. It's meditative. It gives you something to concentrate on. So if I have a stick, knife in my hand, it gives me something to concentrate on, focus on, and it gets you in the moment. It gets you in the moment in a very healthy way. And so I just think overall training, you should do something. If you're not, it doesn't matter what it is. Pick a martial.
Yeah, I've told people, kick a tree. Go out and kick a tree every day. Feel what it feels like to feel that impact when you walk against the tree. Right. That's good. Also it gets your leg more limber, lifting up, try kicking it at different heights. That's a good simple start. Everybody and anybody can do.
Right.
Like the tree doesn't mind. The worst thing you'll do is drop a fruit on you.
Yeah.
That'll get you used to your instinct, right? Catch that.
Yeah. Fruit. Well, I gotta do that here because I got a tree that goes high above my house with it's acorns.
Oh yeah. Those squirrels will throw them at you if you don't watch out.
Oh, we had something with Wendy last night and I got shot right here with one. I'm like, oh my god. I laughed at it.
Nature's built-in self-defense training.
Yeah, yeah.
Larry had me study this story. Sometimes we, like you said, war game, right? And he had me study the story of a woman that got, she wound up getting killed by a mass murderer guy. And there's this like 4-hour interview that you can find on YouTube where the detectives are asking the murderer about how it all went down, and the murderer tells the whole story. And he almost sounds like a normal guy. He doesn't sound like a crazy nut. He's like super calm. He's like, oh yeah. Right. And I got in a fight with her. And when he gets in a fight with this woman, on a trail in a park, and there were other people in the park that day too. And, he had two weapons. He had like a pipe and something else. I don't remember. And she was actually a good martial artist who had trained regularly, but, and she managed to disarm both weapons from the guy, one and then the other. But unluckily, because her training was when they disarm, she must have set the weapons down or threw them aside rather than beating them with them like she should have. And he did wind up overcoming her and tying her to a tree, carrying her around for 3 days in his van before he killed her. And, you know, one of the big lessons in that story is, you know, you got to be careful how you train. You know, you told the stories about police catching their shells. So maybe you could dig a little more into how do we train, and then what to be careful of if you get into a new school or something and they're doing practices that might not be the best for actual
train. Whatever training you're doing, put into the proper context of the training. So if you go into a school and someone's training like maybe five or six different movements in a kata, you don't fight like how you do a kata. But if you practice those motions for power, explosiveness, twitch type two twitch muscle fiber, and you're doing them dynamically, now you might not move like that in a fight, but if your muscles are getting trained like that, it's got substance for self-defense. So train it in context. Don't pretend that that's how you're going to really move in a fight. I used to tell guys at the range, this used to drive me nuts. And I, as soon as I was able to change it, I changed it. But they had this thing as you draw and you shoot your stage of fire. And then they wanted you to keep your gun pointed downrange for safety, right? Because we're on the range, and take these big, long looks behind you to, you know, make sure there was no more bad guys or anything like that. And that created a cognizant dissonance. There was a in order to do that, you have to disconnect your belief system in reality. Okay. First off, it goes against the plus one rule. If I just engage somebody in this direction, the plus one rule says there's someone else. Secondly, in real life, I would bring the gun in, point it down. If I had to change directions, downrange is wherever I'm looking. So what I started doing is they want you to be able to break that intense adrenaline dump that you're going to have, which causes you to intensely fixate on an area or a threat, right? Yeah, so I get it. So yeah, it all comes in. So instead of doing those long, big looks and keeping the gun out here where someone else can grab it,
disarm you.
Long, right. Big looks, right. I would just have the guys come back to sole position, or I would just have them come back to high ready, which would be here, center body, and just look real quick, you know, hey, everyone good. Okay, you just had a shooting, blah, blah, blah. Okay, everyone good. Anyone hit? And you get right back in that direction. Keep it in context to what you're doing. A lot of times, if I'm on an indoor range, you're limited on what type of drills you can do. So let's make this about marksmanship. Take your time, use your sights, get the best shot you
can. Practice your breathing, right?
Yeah, use your breathing. You know, most people can't hit something this big at 50 feet with a pistol, just standing. It's hard, but you can if you practice it. And I'd have guys going slower. I would have them using the stall wall, lean up against the wall, use it for support. If you're in a mall and someone has a rifle and you have a pistol, that's like a samurai sword. They got the samurai sword and you've got a knife. In most cases, the samurai sword is going to win. So if you got a pistol and they got a long gun, you're going to lose in most cases if they know where you're at and they can decide to engage you. So you might only have one shot. So if you're going to engage, first off, you're not required to. You're required to keep yourself safe and escape. But if you have a conscience and you're going to engage to stop this maniac, you might only have one shot. So make a count. So like when I'm on the range, I try to get guys to practice marksmanship. And if there is going to be any movement, you know, come back like that. You know, if you want to basically everyone good, you want to just check to make sure everyone's good. You're not really doing these long looks to break your – that'll break it. Everyone good? And then you get back on point. The same thing would go for, let's just say, combat sports. Combat sports isn't the most realistic fighting, not even MMA. There's no refs in a real fight. I get it.
They don't allow certain things that we might definitely do.
Absolutely. But take it for the context of what it is. If you're sparring or if you're grappling or if you're rolling, you're building a timing and distancing and live resistance. So just think of it from that aspect. You can't be maiming your training partners, obviously. So, you know, if you get really good at the certain big things that happen in grappling or in whatever, you can then play around with little things. Ah, look at this. Look at, I got this. You could play around with that. But to train it in context, because if you start training out of context, it's unrealistic, and that's when you get yourself caught.
And then you don't want to repeat bad habits, like you were saying. Another one that we've talked about is, you know, when we're training with sticks, and let's say we do a disarm, like the tendency is, I'm such a nice guy, I always want to pick up your stick or your knife that I disarmed and hand it back to you.
Right.
And I guess there's quite a few situations in real life where people have done, and you talked about one in your book.
Yeah.
So like what we do is we don't pick up each other's tool. Like if I disarm you, you got to pick it up.
Right.
I don't want to practice giving you your stick back, because what happens in a real situation, we practice it so many times that's what we do, is give the assailant the weapon back.
Well, there was a situation that they were training, because a large majority of officers get killed. Not a large majority, but a significant percentage.
Too many.
They get killed with their own firearm. Especially in the old days, guys would reach and get their gun. So we were practicing, they had us practicing gun defense, you know, defense against gun grabs. So you're standing in front of the guy, your partner, and he's going to reach for your gun. You're going to let him get it, so then you can do your technique. So you got guys doing this so they can get the gun. And I'm like, you're just making guys practice on how to let someone get their gun. What are you doing this for? So, like, I had them change that whole entire thing.
Good for you.
If you see someone reaching, just, what are you doing? You step away, you smack their hand away. Like, you know, I was worried more about the rear gun grabs that you might not see, how to react and secure that. So that was another way
training of training. Your instinct and, right?
Yeah.
And then context and your situation.
We had a situation, and this wasn't mine, so this is a secondhand story, but I believe it. A firearms instructor, martial arts, defensive tactics instructor, had a situation, dude pulls out a gun at him in an ATM machine. He beautifully disarmed the guy because he was so used to doing that scenario. That one time, that one scenario popped up for him, boom, and he handed the gun back to the guy. And both of them were shocked for a second, and then it turned into a real fight to get the gun. And he got it away from him again, but it's like, dude, that could have turned out really bad.
Yeah, right. You don't want that on your tombstone.
What's that?
I said, you don't want that on your tombstone.
No. Yeah, that's
not with my own gun, because I gave the guy his gun back.
train within context. If people train within context, you could still get some type of worth out of almost any training, as long as you put it in the proper mental frame of what it's for in martial arts.
So all that to be said, we're telling people, definitely start finding a way to train. But that being said, consider and reconsider the way you're training and the way that people are trying to train around you. It doesn't mean they're right just because they've done it a lot of times. A lot of times people practice things that they shouldn't be practicing. So you have to consciously, again, war game stuff in your head. And I remember the other thing I was going to add to the convo before we got to this is we have like two big stories right here in town that happened within the last few years where some sort of altercation started. One of them was a liquor store. The guy's really mouthing off, being a real asshole, you know, causing a bunch of problems. And the guy who's running the counter says, you know, I had enough of this guy, walks around, knocks him out. The guy falls backwards, smashes his head on the way down because he's completely passed out, falling full speed, and dies right there in that moment. So you have to really consider, and this happens in road race situations too, like the movies show people like hitting each other back and forth 3, 4, 7 times or more. But in reality, one blow can cost a life. And you have to ask yourself, do you want to spend the next 10, 15, the rest of your life dealing with, even if you're the winner, the fact that you just killed somebody when maybe you could have not done that?
Right.
So be careful what you train and how far you push things.
Right? That's why I always recommend cross training and different things like judo. Like I did Aikido, which is like judo on crack, but I got good enough at it to randori judo black belts to a draw. Get good at judo, get good at jujitsu, start practicing grappling. Because maybe once you got someone, if you could restrain somebody, that might mean the difference between you going to prison for manslaughter and you not going to prison. If you're in a restaurant, and someone's doing some crap, and you decide, okay, I've had enough. He's just being an idiot. Maybe he is being an idiot. And he comes up to you, and he's going to do something, and your only reaction is to punch him in the face. And he does fall down his head on the table or something. That might be bad, but if your reaction is to do a double leg on him, take him to the ground, mount him, and hold him there like a baby, he won't be able to do nothing. So to me, it's all like I try to restrain somebody, not in my little situation that I had, but he was so much bigger than me, I couldn't. So he got out of me trying to restrain him twice. So I tried. He was attacking me, and instead of fighting him, I tried to restrain him twice. And this person's also trained, and they were bigger than me. I couldn't restrain him under the situation. The guy was mad. So I had to resort to strikes. So know when you have to.
You know, the more options you have available, the more things you can consider. And I think that also applies to the things we carry on our body in terms of self-defense tools and practicing using them. I always carry pepper spray with me. Mm-hmm. It's just another little tool in my pocket. I got a knife too. But, you know, maybe I can choose in this situation, I don't have to get out the knife. I can just use the pepper spray. But I think my most effective tool is flight. You know, I look at a guy like you. You've trained your whole life, and I've trained for like a few years. If a guy like your size, I got to run.
You can just go for a jog and get away from me, man. I'm too injured. But I think a lot of times, well, what are you wearing too? You know, so like, what are you wearing that is going to help your self-defense? How are you going to fight with what you have on? You're not always wearing loose, you know, sweatpants or gi pants. Sometimes you have on something that might be a little more restrictive depending where you're at. What if you have on a pair of suit pants or something? What if you're wearing a suit? So like what we used to have one Thursday a month in our school would be plain clothes Thursday. And we would tell everyone to wear whatever you would wear. Don't come in here wearing loose stuff. Wear what you would wear. And you'd be surprised on how it changes everything when you have to do martial arts outside of a gi or your comfortable clothing. And you're in your regular clothes. And then how can you make regular clothes turn into a weapon? You know, in jiu-jitsu and judo, we use a gi. We'll choke someone out with a gi. Well, you can still do that with shirts. You might just have to bunch the shirt up a little bit more and do some things. But so it's to give people these different things in their head that they might not think of normally. Another tool that we would use is, and I've got them right here. This is kind of cool, actually. So we would... go a whole month of our training for, say, for jiu-jitsu. November would be no grip November. So we would actually hold balls, tennis balls, and all our grappling would be like using monkey paw things, but we'd still be wrestling jiu-jitsu for submissions and chokes and whatever, but we couldn't grab them. We had to hang on to these balls.
You got to really learn those wrist hooks.
So you're really learning all the other movements besides the grabs. Or grapple.
Yeah.
Grapple. I used to do this. I did this with my coach, but I used to do it with my students too. Grapple blindfolded. So you're grappling blindfolded. You start from your knees. You start from a position. You're blindfolded. Now you're going all on feel. Okay. You know, you're in a safe area. You know, you got enough room. You're not going to run into something. It was just funny because I was grappling them blindfolded. I did really good. This was my coach many years ago. And I was doing really good blindfolded, like real grappling to about a draw. And then we took our blindfolds off and he beat the crap out of me. I'm like, I need to be blind with this thing again. But it's good training. It's stuff that if you can do that in training, it's going to pay dividends in real life.
Right.
And one thing I always tell people in training too is to warm up properly. Because you don't want to be getting injured. And I had a thing where this guy was another defensive tactics instructor. He's like, F the warm-ups. On the street, you're not going to get a warm-up. Yeah, but on the street, you're going to have an adrenaline dump if it's real. and your heartbeat's going to double and triple within seconds. It's going to pump the blood from your organs to your muscles. That's your warm-up, the actual adrenaline. In a classroom setting or training session, no one's adrenalized, and with these guys, no one even wants to be here. You have to warm them up. So, like, do a proper warm-up.
Right, and if you get injured in class, how good are you going to be when you walk out on the street and something happens and you're limping because you overdid it in class, right?
Yeah. You know, that's another thing when you start talking about, like, ego. That's why it was violence and ego. That ego will get in your way in training. And it'll keep you from training right. It'll keep you from training. I've watched it in jiu-jitsu all the time. Someone won't want to roll with a lower-ranked guy because that lower-ranked guy is beating all the higher ranks. So they talk about that everyone checks their ego at the door in arts like this, and that's not really the case. So it's like, yeah, roll with anybody and don't worry about it. Don't worry about the country belt. Just get out there and do it. And
I would say the other side of that as a warning to some folks, like if you decide, hey, I do want to get involved with martial arts training or self-defense, self-protection training, and you go to a school, I do think you have to be wary of other people that have ego problems. And do you want to put yourself in a situation if the teacher or the sensei or some of their top students are having an ego problem and they're actually training in a way that is unsafe? Like, you don't want to get hurt in your training process.
Those intermediate guys, watch out for those intermediate guys, because they're the ones that are like, if you get
something to prove,
the really higher ranked guys or the instructors or assistant instructors who could probably murder, they can murder the medium guys. They're the ones that are going to go light with you, and it's going to be that medium guy who's going to use you as, they're going to try to use you as a dummy. Or some other beginner to whatever degree or another. That's when you just have to think and tap fast and verbally tap. Don't just do that.
Tap.
Yeah. You want physical and verbal tap. Tap, tap. You got it. Tap, tap. Always. Tap often and tap early. And I've so far not been hurt because of a technique, because I have no problem tapping. You know, I've been hurt doing goofy things. Like, I'll sneeze or something, throw my back out. But I haven't been hurt doing that. And now it's just aches and pains as I'm getting older. Like, I held pads for somebody yesterday. So just holding the pads for them so they can, you know, do the pads. And my shoulder's killing me today.
On that topic, I would say pain is an important thing to talk about. Like you said, you've never been seriously hurt. But I do feel like from my training in the past few years, like, feeling the pain is crucial to understanding how something works, especially with restraints and locks, small circle trapping. Like, if I don't get my wrist squeezed to the point where I feel why it hurts and how it hurts, I don't really understand how to apply the technique. And so we do have to have a willingness to have a certain tolerance for pain in order to learn how to inflict pain. Don't you see that as true?
Yeah, it's there's a middle ground for all of it.
Yeah,
it's never all this or all that. There's always a middle ground depending on the technique. And even more importantly is some people can bend their wrists like really far, right? Mm-hmm. Other people, you bend it this far and they're screaming. So you have to know what somebody's, you know, stuff is. Like, one of the things I can do with my finger, that's from grappling and jiu-jitsu. So I kind of got some fun stuff going on with some of my limbs. Not everyone could do that kind of stuff.
Man, so, the muscles in your hand are scary to me. Your hands are like the Hulk.
Well, that's actually a broken bone from many years ago on the top of the hand, and that's not from nothing heroic. I won't even talk about it. But, that was ego that caused that. So, like, I didn't just turn into this. I'm not some monk. I did all these things. I had ego, still do. But now my ego wants me to stay safe, so I don't want to get into fights.
Right.
So I'll do whatever I can to avoid a fight if I can. And that's even with some of the stuff coming up in the world. If we were going to put self-defense into the context of all the ridiculousness we have going on in the world, you may have to be on the move. You may not be able to shelter in place. You may have to be on the move, depending on what's happening. Are you going to want to be getting into fights everywhere you go? You're going to want to avoid conflict. So it's thinking about self-protection. It's thinking about avoiding a fight. Even if I got to walk 2-3 miles in a different direction to get to a point to avoid a fight, it might be worth it depending on.
Yeah, shoot. I thought maybe pretend you're like limping and you're a little bit retarded in a certain situation. You know, whatever it takes, if that gets you out of the situation, that's not a bad thing. If someone's, you know, especially some order follower is going to mistreat you and you know, act like you're something you're not, that might be a good tactic, you know?
I think my opinion with that is going to be they want to push us to a degree to where the civilians are doing it to each other. And the order followers, when they come in, like, none of us are going to fight off an army. We could have an encampment of 20, 30 people. We can give them one hell of a go for it, but we're not going to fight off a military unit. So I'm not really training for a military unit per se. I'm training more for, I mean, I'm going to train for that, but I'm more worried about the rabble, the walking dead.
I agree. And we don't have the numbers of networking and training in groups that would require having any kind of real force.
They can bomb a place. They've got drones. I mean, they got so much stuff.
Technology.
There's a lot of places you can go. I won't get into the military tactical part of it, but just from a self-defense standpoint, my basic thing is that stuff, worst case scenario, happens in society and we start to have a partial breakdown. They're going to do a slow squeeze. They want to get the civilians to do it to one another. They want to be virtuous looking.
Yep.
We're coming in for safety. So we're not going to, it's going to be more like other people that are going to be doing it. And something that I've always said.
Well, the things in the news, you can see that they're trying to foment this division on all levels, whether it's age, race, color, your sexual orientation. They're all being blown out of proportion by these stories that we see. Hopefully you're not watching. I don't watch the lame stream, but you can't help but hearing about it. It's all meant to trigger you against someone of the other sex, size, weight, sex orientation, or whatever, right?
Right. It's all meant putting us in a category where we're othered and they're othered. And
everyone feels alone, scared, and defenseless, and so they act out.
Yeah. They're turning into a pressure cooker. We can get into a whole other conspiracy theorist episode on that. But as far as like self-defense is concerned, just be ready to move. Be ready to avoid fights because they don't want to look like the bad guys. They want.
And I've heard from homeless people that if you stay in one place, you're always going to get robbed. You're always going to get beat up. The best way to be if you are homeless or wind up without a place to stay is to keep moving and find your food too, because you keep getting your food from the same place. Just a matter of time till things become problematic. So if you keep moving, you always have the best chance of survival in that route.
Right. Yeah. You stay on the move. I forgot which Indians it was. Was it the Cherokee? No.
Apache.
Oh man, this is terrible. No, not the Apache. Who were the last Indians to be rounded up?
Well, it was the Sioux Nation, right? Wasn't it?
I'm not sure, but the last ones to be, Mohicans, might have been the Mohicans. But
they all went north up into Canada after the
they stayed on the move. They were the last to be rounded up because they stayed. They were already nomadic and they stayed on the move.
Yep.
So they kept going north. Is definitely might be, you might have
more and all those guys. Yep. Okay. So let's transition. We've talked a lot about the tactics, self-defense, self-protection, martial arts. Let's talk about the moral aspect of this. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your transition where, like you said, you were in the system, you were a police officer. At a certain point in your life, you realized it didn't align with your, and now you call yourself the spiritual anarchist, which I love.
Yeah.
Tell us about the moral aspect of this. And that's, I think, the deeper reality that I'm really getting at.
I'm a comic book nerd. You know, you can see the Thor shirt, right? Like, I'm a comic book nerd.
Me too.
So I always go with what Uncle Ben told Peter Parker: with great power comes great responsibility. So when you have, I don't know what you know as far as your skill level is concerned. I don't care what size you are. If you're starting a fight with me and I'm in a self-defense situation, I'm going to take it very seriously, very fast. If I have to go hands-on, it's going to be very fast. But then I'm going to also de-escalate very fast. If I get control of it, a control of the person, or if I incapacitated them to the degree that they're not a threat and I'm not going to keep going. And that's where you have to be able to control your adrenaline. When your adrenaline goes up, some people want to just snap and they just keep going. You can't do that. You got to bring it back down. So, and that's hard to do in the middle of an adrenaline dump. The only thing that's going to do that is to have training that approximates that type of stress to some degree, and or have a whole bunch of real fights under your belt, which a lot of people don't have. So then know how to train. You could train in a manner that elicits a partial adrenaline response. And that partial adrenaline response training is what's going to help you de-escalate yourself once you've done your technique and you got them, you know, down. You don't really have a moral responsibility to do anything but protect yourself and those who can't protect themselves, in my opinion, with what's coming up today. And a lot of people would say you don't have a moral responsibility to protect anyone but yourself. But everyone here feels a moral responsibility to protect someone other than themselves, someone in their family. You know, if there was a child on the street, you're going to at one point in time have a crisis of conscience where you're going to do something. So if you're going to do it hard, do it fast, do it effective, but then de-escalate. You don't have to keep going. So I think the moral responsibility is talk your way out of a fight if you can. But then once you can't, what was that guy, Patrick Swayze, played in the movie Roadhouse? Be nice until it's time not to be nice, right? I know it's very cliche, but when it's time to go, really go, commit to it. But then be able to dial it back. And that's the hardest thing for some people to do, is to be able to dial it back once they turn on. And, you know, practicing getting consciously angry, like out of nowhere, just yelling and being real serious, but then bringing it back down, just talking normal and nice. Even that will help you be able to dial it back down and keep yourself from that's where your morality lies. When they're no longer a threat, stop. You know, especially with state laws the way they are and different laws. If you don't stop, you're going to end up in jail. I'm telling you, you will end up in jail.
Even if you're in the right
situation, you could win. You win it. You weren't the one who caused it, right? You didn't start the fight. You were defending yourself, but you pieced the dude up because you could fight better. You're probably going to go to jail. So just understand
the truth.
The more damage you do, you know, now if they...
Now it shows intent that you...
Yeah, if they badly hurt somebody in my family or whatever, I'll just do the time. I mean, I wouldn't care then. Right. But, you know, they've got this, and this is what gets me angry. It really gets me angry. This is part of the contradictions in police work. All these different cops and corrections officers, man, I would have done the same thing if my daughters were involved. I would have done the same thing. I would have done the same thing. And it's like, yeah, of course you would. Why am I here then? So they've got it set up to where only people with special monkey suits and shiny things are allowed to use force and or violence or whatever you want to call it. And I don't like that. I am not a violent person, but I think any human being should be allowed to and should be given, like, we're under constant surveillance. Like, you can't, it just, to me, it doesn't, a lot of it just doesn't make sense.
Why would you spend 30 to 50% of your money to keep yourself under constant surveillance and have a bunch of secret agencies keeping track of all your moves? Why would you want that?
The whole thing just doesn't make sense to me. The whole thing it just doesn't make any sense.
It just proves that we are in an immoral world, and the context is that we are under slavery. And so that's why the initiative is here, to actively be making the choice to prepare yourself in every way possible so that you don't get just totally overridden by rage and your heart beating and your adrenaline pumping.
And this is what will happen to people too, it happens with kids. This is why we see some of the school shootings we see. They have the zero violence policy, and it doesn't matter who started the fight. You both are getting suspended, and that's all that matters is who started the fight. So it's the person, and that doesn't mean just who threw the first punch. Who instigated it? If someone said, "I'm going to beat the shit out of you," and they're coming up close to you, they're instigating a violent encounter, and they're starting the fight. And when I was going to school, the person who started the fight was the one who'd get in trouble or more trouble. In some cases, you know, if they started the fight and you won the fight and you won it pretty good, you might do in-school suspension. They were getting out of school suspension. So there was always a worse consequence for the person who actually started the fight, where nowadays it isn't. So they have the zero tolerance policy. So it creates passive aggressiveness. It creates all this nonsense. And then sooner or later, someone snaps. And when they snap, they really snap. That's what we're seeing.
Like built up like a balloon. It's like, boom.
Yeah. So you're always better dealing with something verbally right then and there if someone makes you mad.
Better.
Right then and there. And then be on your way. Don't let it build up. Because sometimes, you know, if you let it build up. I'm glad I grew up in the era that I did. Because nowadays, I was one of my podcasts, I was talking about Generation X. If we were to magically make us 15 years old now and put us in the ninth grade, all of us would be expelled. Every single one of us would be in a fight, multiple fights, with the way they act nowadays. we would all be homeschooled. Like, I think we need to go back to Generation X, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Okay, I want to tell one last little anecdotal thing. I love the Ip Man series, Ip Man. You know, the story of Bruce Lee's teacher.
Yes.
And I think it's in the third one, but I might be a little confused. There's quite a few of them. But they keep asking him, what is Kung Fu? And the answer keeps getting pushed off. And then finally he says, Kung Fu is benevolence. And I think that's a really beautiful statement. When you're train yourself to the point where you can be calm in the storm and you don't have to hurt someone to the extreme. Like you said, you can be benevolent. And it allows you to be benevolent because you have all these options. And I think that's where we want to work towards, is being so skilled that we can exude benevolence into the world. And when you walk with more confidence, I've noticed the longer I've trained, the more confident I can walk into various situations. It's not like I'm not afraid. I am, but the fear level isn't driving as fast or as quick, and that anxiety isn't there. And I'm able to control my breathing because I practice Wim Hof breathing. So I know how to calm my body down better than I would have had I not been training. And so that's what I want to encourage people to start doing, if you haven't already: breathing practices, meditation, yoga, and any kind of physical training you can do, whether it's physical fitness, or if you can find people to train with, or people have some kind of knowledge that they can impart upon you, do it. And the sooner the better, and be careful that you don't get involved with people that have inflated egos. So that's advice for the folks listening from me. And then I'll turn it to you, and you can close up with anything you'd like to share with people, and then websites and where they can find your work.
Well, you can find my book, Violence and Ego. It's on Amazon. I don't really get too many royalties, but it's on there. So if you go there and type in Violence and Ego, Dan Arnold, it'll come up. I don't know, as far as closing is concerned, if you get into a martial arts going up, and I have this in the book, Violence and Ego, make sure the instructor knows what they're talking about. And if you've never been in a school before, it's why the book I wrote will help you out, because I wrote it for that person who doesn't have a whole lot of experience, so they can see what to look out for from a martial arts instructor, and make sure they've got an instructor that's more about seeing you develop than seeing themselves develop. That they're more about how awesome they think you are than about how awesome they want you to think they are. Okay. There's a lot of instructors out there. That's what they want. And they have cult-like environments in their schools. You don't want no part of that. Be able to spot that kind of stuff early. It doesn't matter how skilled they are. They might be one of the most skilled martial artists you've ever seen. It doesn't matter. If they're more interested in showing you how awesome they are, and they're not interested in showing you how awesome you are, and how to build you up and have balance. They should be able to do both. You should know that they know what they're talking about. They have confidence in what they're teaching because they can do it. But then they're not always trying to impress you with all this stuff. They want to give you time to work on some things. Have clear-cut goals with an instructor. Some people used to come into my schools, they didn't want competition. They didn't even want rank. They just wanted to train. Just train. Have at it. Have at it. Belts don't mean nothing. Neither competitions, neither one of them are going to save your life. Have fun with it. When you get into a school that you're actually training, moving, being physical, and you're having fun, especially it's stress relief in today's day and age, do it. Don't ever leave that place. It'll make you a better fighter, a better human being, better able to defend yourself, and you're going to be healthier just from the stress relief. I don't care what it could be, the YMCA karate. I don't care what it is. If you like it and you're having fun, do it. You know, if it's a good environment, stay with it, because there's a lot of bad ones out there, actually. And like my school had, I still get a lot of compliments. My school had an environment that was, it still had that like respect of the traditional martial arts. So we still had all that kind of respect of the traditional martial arts without being culty. I won't let anyone call me sensei, call me Dan. Like the kids can call me sensei if I had like teenagers or whatever, but everyone else call me Dan. Or Coach Dan, they called the jiu-jitsu coach, Coach Nate, they call us coach, whatever. But we had a sort of fight school atmosphere mixed with a family traditional martial arts. It was like a little bit of both. So when we spar or rolled, it was good medium stuff. It wasn't killer. But it wasn't so light that you had this false sense of security. You know, there's a middle ground to find. And I think we did that pretty well. If my roof hadn't caved in, When the roof caved in on the place I was renting 1 week before I was supposed to renew the lease, I took that as a sign from the universe to
move the training to your backyard.
Yeah, because I wasn't clearing the rent rule. I mean, I was coming out of pocket every month, but I was having a blast doing it. That's another thing. I wasn't about the money. You know, some people try to loop you into contract. Yeah. If their product is good, they don't need a contract, in my opinion.
They'll keep keeping stuff further out. Like, oh, we'll get to the knives and stuff when you get to the certain level. We're just going to do punches. It's like, come on, man, you're just fleecing people for the money. You got some real skills to teach. Let's get to it. There's no reason to put that shit off.
I had a fencing school do that to me. They wanted me to learn the foil before I got to the, you know, before I got to the saber. And I'm like, I want to do saber. I'm good at the saber. I've done it before. And she wanted to just make a bunch of money. And meanwhile, I took out her whole saber team that night and beat one of her foil fencers. That was one of her. I was like, no, I want to do saber. Yeah. Now she wanted me to buy all the foil stuff. Then I can buy them. No, I left.
Right. It's not a friggin' subscription. It's right. Like, if they really, like you said, the key is noticing that they really want to find the best in you. And you can tell that if somebody's transmitting that or if they're just trying to fleece you. And, you know, it takes four schools before you find the right one. You're better off doing that than staying at that other one and wind up twisting a ligament or something and being limping the rest of your life and being like, why did I train? That was stupid. It's because you went to the wrong place and you didn't see the writing on the wall, you know? So all that to be said. Like I said, I'm intending to do a series on this topic. And so I'm really hoping to have you back, Dan. You're someone I really want to learn a lot more from, hopefully even train with someday.
Yeah, we'll get together someday.
If you are willing, I'd like to continue this conversation. We got a lot more to talk about. This was just sort of a cursory getting started. But I'm going to post your links. I have all your links that I will post with the show and in the comments. So, we'll go over all that. And I hope this inspires the listeners. I hope you guys take on some kind of training. I'm going to be starting to share what I can on my social media channels little by little. And my teacher, Larry, I've always called him Larry. I only started calling him Sensei a little bit recently because I noticed in your book you said Sensei actually means he who came before you, right? And so, we've always just trained with whatever we're wearing in his yard. And so,
right.
You know, if it's cold out, we're wearing a jacket, you know.
Yeah, I never got into being called teacher or anything by a foreign language. Just call me Dan, and that's cool. You should have respect for me without having to call me by some foreign name. You know, you should respect everybody
straight
equally.
Love that.
You know, one last thing I'd say, too, as far as the contracts are concerned, I've seen a lot of times where they'll treat you like gold till you sign the contract. So that's another reason why if they say, I know a guy in Florida, no contracts, his school is huge because he's putting out such a quality level of teaching. Everyone comes back. I mean, that's what you want to find. If you can find that, it'll be golden. And then if you don't have a school around you, man, YouTube's got videos. Just find one person to train with. Find a person to train with, YouTube some videos, do anything. And I had some of that in the book, Violence and Ego, some techniques and some things you could practice to just get moving, just get going to defend yourself.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that's about it for me from this. We talk about martial arts all day long, but.
Yeah, we'll get into it more in the future. But for today, I got a load of stuff to go take care of in my life. And I'm super appreciative for you setting aside.
Thank you, too. It was great talking
thank
to you,
Dan. I really appreciate it. So, folks. Much love, and evil is the destruction of freedom.
Peace.
I'll be able to see you too, where can you do it in slow motion? Like, after? Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can set it on the mug.
Yes, you do. Good. That's great. Hey. Don't make it big. Come on.
What you learning?
It's like watching a chef.
Reach out to me. Yeah. Reach out to me. And now you're starting to hold hard.
I know. I'm clenching up.
Yeah. I can feel it
so
totally.
Much better when you listen.
So much better.
When you start doing rich stuff, you know, start getting
a little panicky.
Yeah.
But that's what we're trying to do, right? We're trying to do this and then be able to pull it out at any time and go, yes, sir. Bam. That's what we're trying to do. Yeah. Not we're lost in this thing. We can't do anything else.
Right.
I should be able to do this drill and have a conversation with dude over there. Right? If I can't have a conversation with dude over there about taquitos.
Don't got it.
You don't got it.
Yeah. Listen. Listen up.
So look how I deal with the mess up part. Watch. I go, oh, gee, I messed up. Oh, I messed up. Oh, darn it.
Okay.
Yeah, I just keep my thing and I get the rhythm. There's the rhythm.
Yeah.
Back in the roll.
Yeah.
And then, so that's a little bit different than doing the air. It's a little bit different, you'll see.
This took me so long to get this hand to loosen up. Like,
yeah.
I'm starting to get a little better. Uh-huh.
Especially your left hand. Right.
It's better now.
Yeah.
Somewhat.
Yeah, a lot better. I can feel it totally. You can feel it when I'm clenching on my stick hard.
I don't know what I'm doing. I'm telling myself in my head, I'm like, settle down.
Yeah. No, the tighter we got it, the better. Mm-mm. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go through those knifings real quick.
This book and this moment are urging you to pause. The book that changed my life. Are you ready to start your new life? Are you ready to awaken to the purpose and the passion that's been waiting inside of you all along? Check out andevil.life. Evil is the destruction of freedom. I got the book, The End of All Evil. I got plenty of copies. So if you click on this link, either this book here or this link, it will take you to a payment page. You get the book and I send you some End Evil podcast stickers. My book is out. And so you can right now click on this link, order that copy that I'll sign for you. And I will also send you some stickers. Or you can get both. And this is a limited time deal that I've got on my website right now. You can order my book, the author's copy signed, and you can get The End of All Evil for $45 for both. And that link is right here on the End Evil store.